Richard Nelson here, and you're tuned in to The Commonwealth Matters. And today's edition is going to be a reflection on some really difficult news that we got last week, the passing of Charlie Kirk. It wasn't just a death, but it was a tragic death, an assassination. While he was speaking to a group of students at Utah Valley University doing Q&A, which was something that Charlie Kirk did all across the country. He would bring in a conservative Christian perspective to many of the social and political issues of the day, and he would dialogue with students. And we have been trying to process that death here at Commonwealth Policy Center as individuals and as a staff. And I'd like to spend the remainder of this hour, half hour with you to work through his death, what it tells about us, what it tells us about our state of our politics as well. Later in the program, we will have one of CPC's interns, Ryan DeWitt, who's a student at Boyce College. He will be joining us as well and sharing some perspective also. When I was working out of my home office on Wednesday, I got a text message from a close friend, a younger guy who's an attorney, and he simply said, "I am in shock." I texted back and wanted to know what was going on. Did not hear from him right away. And so I got on the news sites and I found immediately that Charlie Kirk was shot. If you've not seen the video, it is a graphic video showing him sitting on a stool, engaging with somebody from the audience, responding to a question. And then you see in the frame where he slumps over and then falls down. And it was very, very graphic. Shock, grief, sadness permeated many across the nation, especially the younger generation who really were impacted greatly by Charlie Kirk. Charlie was only 31 years old, and he started a group called Turning Point USA when he was only 18. And the goal of his organization was to engage the public arena from a Christian perspective and to speak to politics and social issues from that biblical worldview. And one of his distinctives was that he engaged these very difficult issues with grace. I've seen a number of interviews that he's done while on campus, engaging people, especially those struggling with gender dysphoria, those who identified as homosexual, those who did not think like Charlie. And he truly wanted to get to know people and how they came about to their positions. And he challenged them. And there was pushback in many of these interviews, but it wasn't. There was never belittling. There's never condemnation or ridicule, at least not that I've seen. Now, maybe that's happened. Maybe I've not seen that. But I don't think that's who he was as a person. I don't think that was reflective, even though I see a lot of response to this. We're going to get into that in just a moment. The response, particularly from the political left, because not only are many young conservatives grieving and older conservatives, I was in shock when I heard that news because, quite frankly, the work that I do at Commonwealth Policy Center is in the same lane that Charlie Kirk is in, except we're at the state level. I don't have the notoriety that he does, don't have as big of a platform that he does, but I address the same issues. I engage opponents on the political left, debating and dialoguing the definition of marriage and gender and who defines these things. And I got a call from my family, a couple family members that day, by the way, checking in on me because they know that I do this work. Oh, are you okay? How are you doing? And yes, it is jarring when you have a visible political figure like Charlie Kirk, who is assassinated for simply holding the views that he held. I had a chance to get on social media later that day. This was later afternoon, Wednesday, to review some of the what was being said out there. Actually, was on the air with a TV station. A TV station asked if I would do an interview with them. I had a chance to review some of what was being said. And quite frankly, I was shocked at some of the responses, many of the responses by those who were celebrating his death. there was a young woman on TikTok who was dancing to the news. Another video showed a college-age kid with a megaphone leading a chant. We got Charlie in the neck, neck, neck. And then those in the audience were responding by saying neck, neck, neck. I don't understand that. I don't know if I've ever seen that. And actually, in all transparency, the last time I saw a celebration of death and destruction was on 9/11, when our news crews were going across the world and looking at how the world was responding to the attacks on the World Trade Center. And there was celebration in many Middle Eastern cities where they were burning the flag, where they were dancing on the flag. Some were shouting death to America. And that was the last time I've ever seen such a vile response to a horrible tragedy. The responses on social media don't end there. There was a trans activist attorney and author, Cheryl Weichel, posted this. I wish the bullet that hit Charlie Kirk a very pleasant day. There was a video of students at the University of North Texas who was engaging. There was a young girl engaging her fellow classmates. When they learned about the news of Charlie Kirk's death, they were laughing and celebrating. And this young student said, that's not funny. He's a human being. He had a family, a wife, and children. And yet these classmates caught on video in the classroom, they were celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. The University of North Texas issued a statement essentially saying nothing about that video that went out. Over at Twitter, there is a trans activist saying that what happened to Charlie Kirk was all the consequences of his own actions. He deserved it. Charlie Kirk was pro-Second Amendment. He believed in definitions of marriage and sex given to us by our creator. And this is what he deserved. This was his comeuppance. How sad. How sad that we would see a single response like this. And yet these are widespread responses from all across the country. I'm in shock over the assassination. I'm just as much in shock over the number of people who are celebrating his death, dancing on his grave, so to speak. And I think that this tells us a lot about the state of our politics, where it's okay to use violent rhetoric that would dehumanize somebody, but then rhetoric that celebrates somebody's demise. It's a state of how we have so devalued human life, where it's okay if there's somebody that does not have the right opinions, hold the right values, that it is okay that they're taken out. They're that big of a threat to society. Friends, when something like this could happen to one of us, who with conviction and with articulation can engage very challenging moral and social issues and step into the public realm, and when something like that can be taken out by an assassin's bullet, what's to stop the next person? This is something I've reflected on personally, leading the Commonwealth Policy Center. I have spoken on college campuses across the state. I am in public venues speaking to these very same issues. I will sometimes engage those on the other side engaging these issues. And I think that the political left would like nothing more than to silence us, than to frighten us, and to see that this event leads us to all go into hiding, if you will, to pull back, to stop speaking to the issues, stop engaging, and to go into full retreat mode. I'll say this, and we're going to go to a break in just a moment. That's not going to happen at Commonwealth Policy Center. God has called me and the staff here at CPC to this work. In fact, as I'm recording this, we're preparing for a big public event, actually two big public events within just a matter of days. I've had people call us and say, Richard, actually text us and say, are you going to have security at the event? Got people asking me. And my response is, at least at one of the events, we will see about the others. But the bottom line is that we will not retreat. We will continue to press on, hold our events. We will continue to speak and engage on these very, very important issues of the day. With that said, we're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. Have you found yourself frustrated and angry about the direction of the country? Maybe you're watching Fox News and you see what's happening in Congress or in other parts of the country. Let me encourage you to turn your frustration and energy into a positive direction. Have you considered running for local office? Listen to me for a minute. You can have a greater impact on local elections and on policy decisions if you serve in local government. School board, for example, they set curriculum decisions and tax policy. How about city council or fiscal court? These are very important elected offices where you can have a positive impact on. Consider running for local office. CPC is bringing candidate training events all across the state. And we'd love for you to join. If you've ever felt called to run or interested in running, come on and join us. You can find out more information at the Commonwealth Policy website at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. Go ahead and check it out, and we hope to see you in the fall. Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. And joining me in the studio is Ryan DeWitt, CPC's newest intern. He's also a student at Boyce College, and I wanted Ryan to join us to share his perspective on the death of Charlie Kirk, what this means to him and his peers at Boyce College. Boyce College, for those of you not familiar, is a small conservative Christian college in Louisville. It's on the campus of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. It is their four-year college. And Ryan, I told you that I wouldn't put you on the spot. I'd make it easy for you. But I really thought that this would help our listeners to hear from the younger generation. Before we got on the program, I was talking about the generational divide that's there. I am a Gen Xer. You're a Gen Z. So you're what, 20, 19?
19.
And I appreciate, again, your courage to come on to this program with such short notice. But there are generational differences. And your generation of conservatives was greatly influenced by Charlie Kirk. My generation did not have a Charlie Kirk. We had, when I was in high school, Rush Limbaugh was coming on the scenes. He was in a different lane. He was an entertainer. He was a conservative talk show host. But to have a political activist speaking to moral and social issues in the public realm, your generation got to see this up close and personal. And now, of course, Charlie Kirk was only 18. He was just a little younger than you when he founded Turning Point USA. And he had this huge media platform. He was also a very effective organizer. And his influence. He was smart, articulate. He knew American history. He understood our political system. And he helped, I think, address a lot of the questions of the day that your generation is just trying to figure out. And shame on my generation, by the way, Gen X, shame on the boomers, shame on those who've gone before you for leaving a culture that is in such confusion, where we don't understand and cannot agree on what is marriage, what is male, what is female, what are appropriate moral boundaries in the public square. You've all got this, the extra burdens. It's hard to be a young person growing up, but you've got these other extra burdens where you just, there's no up or down. Your feet, if you will, are planted firmly in the air, right? There's no solid footing there. And so a Charlie Kirk comes along and he would address these issues, hot button, difficult issues, go to college campuses and help young people think through these issues. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's an incredibly fair assessment for Gen Z commentators in the modern age. Many hide behind it, speaking to a camera, hide behind anonymity in some cases. Charlie Kirk was one of the only people willing to go in person to college campuses to speak to those who he knew disagreed with him. For those of my age, of my political persuasion, if you didn't listen to Charlie Kirk or watch his material, you watch someone parallel to him. And so Gen Z, especially Gen Z men, have been hit incredibly hard by this news that someone who they have watched, I'd say dozens, if not hundreds of hours of material from, saw him killed brutally in a stage just like the one they've always seen him. And that's had a profound impact on a lot of people that I know will stay with them for a long time.
I agree. I've heard this political targeting, this assassination, likened to JFK. Now, JFK, of course, was the president of many boomers, baby boomers, who were in high school or middle school. And of course, they remember that 1960 presidential race. And it was Camelot. JFK was young. He was represented a different generation and had these ideals, was very idealistic. And he resonated with the younger generation. And when the news of his assassination came through, every single boomer remembered where they were. That really had an impact on their lives. You can talk to any boomer today and they could tell you where they were, how they heard the news, where they were, how they felt. And I think with your generation, Gen Z, especially males, there's a similar impact that Charlie Kirk's death has. One of his unique distinctives, and by the way, I need to say this, that don't believe what you read in a description of somebody. Read several different angles, because if you were to read a description of Charlie Kirk, especially from those on the political left, you hear terms like divisive, polarizing, hateful, demeaning, a number of these things. If you read an assessment from those on the right, you're going to hear something different. And actually, I would encourage you to do this. Look at some of the videos. Look at his content. Go to his website. It's still there, by the way. As we record this program, I just learned that his team at Turning Point USA still went on with his program, with his podcast. His seat was empty. And the reason why they did that was because they believe that Charlie would have wanted the program to go on. And Ryan, we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes of how do we process through this? What are the next steps? Where do we go from here? One of his distinctives was he believed in the reality of God, not just any God, but the God of the Bible, who spoke the world into existence. He believed in the literal Genesis account, where he created mankind in his image, male and female. I mean, they're defined by God. It's not assigned at birth, like your generation is told today. By the way, I was at the doctor's earlier today, and filling out the forms, I did it online beforehand, but it asked for gender, and they had this. And I almost objected. I let it go, but it said male assigned at birth, female assigned at birth, or other. And I wanted to say, and you know, the receptionist had nothing to do with that choice, but I was made male by the Creator at conception. I didn't have a choice. And it wasn't a doctor or a nurse. It wasn't somebody who assigned it to me. It was the Creator. I bring this up because this is an existential issue right now. And this is the culture that you're growing up in. And this is relevant to the conversation because Charlie Kirk would speak to things like this. He believed in a God who made male and female, a God who defined marriage as being between one man and one woman. He would engage those who were transgender, and he did it with compassion. The numerous interactions that I was able to see for myself, he didn't mock. He wasn't demeaning or belittling, but he was helping these people who had the courage to come to a microphone and talk about their struggles, and he helped them work through it. The same Christianity that he espoused that told him proper definitions and how to think through these issues also told him how to treat people with grace and with care. Is that something that attracted you to Charlie Kirk? Is that something you've noticed as well?
I think, yes, that's something I've absolutely noticed for some of his videos. That there's a tendency for especially a lot of people in the online space, and I would say especially in the right-wing space, to try to provoke a reaction out of people for clicks and replies. And he was profoundly against that, that he was charitable, that he wasn't insulting. He didn't try to get one over on them. He tried to provoke honest dialogue, and as was on the slogan on the tent under which he was shot, prove me wrong. He didn't try to, he wasn't in it for his own influence. He wasn't in it for likes and follows. He was in it to change minds and hearts. And I think that's what makes it such a terrible passing. He's gone.
And one thing I noticed, Ryan, was that at his rallies and events, he would attract people across the political spectrum. It wasn't just a bunch of conservatives, but there were kids who were in the middle and there were kids who were far left, and they wanted to hear from this guy, willing to come onto college campuses, which many of them are very hostile to traditional views of family and morality, of biblical worldview. And he was willing to come. By the way, scores of these universities pushed him away, said, you cannot come. You're too divisive. You're about marginalizing others. And yet he would press on that and eventually found the open door. But the universities, the irony here is that the universities pride themselves as places of intellectual inquiry, places where free speech is welcome, a place where that's safe for discussion of hard issues. But not when it comes to conservative principles. And that's something that Charlie Kirk was doing, something that nobody else was doing in that regard. And have you ever heard him speak in person? But you've seen him online and you've experienced a lot of his content. You know, one of the reasons why I think Charlie Kirk was so popular was he spoke clearly to important issues and he brought clarity where there was confusion. And if you listen to some of the ideas of the left when it comes to moral boundaries or the limits or non-limits of what a human being can be, you don't hear clear answers, no foundation, and you hear things that don't make sense. And Charlie Kirk brought clarity to the conversations of the day. I wrote a column about this, and one of my observations was that one reason why I think he appealed, and I touched on this a bit, but he appealed to a generation unrooted in anything solid, a generation told to define their own reality right down to their very genetic code. Now, that is an untenable position. You can identify with the opposite sex. You can give an external appearance of the opposite sex, but to truly live that out, it's not going to work. It's because right down to our very genes, we're either male or we're female. Young people need to hear this. And I've heard Charlie Kirk counsel and coach gender dysphoric people on this, and he's done it in a compassionate way. So he brings a response to a generation that's confused and threatened by this expressive individualism that threatens, for example, women's safety and private spaces in public. And that's something where, as a teenager, I couldn't imagine this for a young woman who could potentially have a biological male come into her dressing room or locker room or join their sports team. I couldn't imagine how traumatic it is. It's hard enough to be a young person, isn't it? But then to have personal spaces violated is another story, mm-hmm. isn't it?
And I think a large aspect of, like you said, the rootlessness of the age of Gen Z, especially in this modern time, is that so many people are looking for something to ground their identity in, and that people ground their ideals in gender dysphoria, in pretty much anything that they can find. And it makes, for men and women, women don't feel safe in public spaces because public spaces have gotten profoundly more unsafe. Young men need roots to land, to family, that they don't find ownership in it. And so a lot of the left and right of young men feel the need to find something. And I think this tragedy has exacerbated some of that. I can speak only for myself, that after such a tragedy like this, you feel the need to do something. You've witnessed, and for those who have seen the video, you know you've witnessed a profound, deep evil taking place. And so you feel a righteous need to do something. And a response by many authority figures and mentors in my life was that after an event such as this, it is of the utmost importance to to funnel that righteous anger, and don't let that become bitterness. Don't let it sit, but to motivate it into a passion for justice and of righteousness.
Yeah. Tell us what you did when you learned of this news and you had that raw grief that was going through you. Tell the listeners what you did.
So when I first heard the news, the pool I work at the seminary was empty. And I was sitting in my desk there, the little table that we set up so that I can do homework when no one's there. And I saw an article pop up. I saw some tweets about the news. And it just struck me because I remember distinctly the first Trump assassination attempt and hearing about that and being immensely relieved that it wasn't what we feared it was. And to go from something like that to this, where the worst was in fact true. And I was shaken at first. In the Lord's providence, one of my professors had just gone in to swim at the pool. And I was able to talk with him. And he told me the two perspectives I've shared with some of you all, that you must first recognize the moral human tragedy of an event like this, and also not sit on your anger. And make it worth something.
Yeah. Do you think your generation, we're going to close out here in just a moment, do you think your generation will turn this anger into a positive direction and make it worth something in the long run? Do you see more Charlie Kirks coming out from this, or more political action, or more societal engagement because of this from your generation?
I sincerely hope so. It's something I recognize in my generation. For as much as I'm the majority of Gen Z is very online. And the distinct feature is that there is a deep divide between the Gen Z right and the Gen Z left. And where you see a bunch of the horrible, just abhorrent responses from many on the left to this, I see more encouragement from those on the right who take this as a rallying cry for hope that it does not have to be this way and that things can change. And that gives me hope.
Well, that's good. That's a good word to close on. Ryan DeWitt, thank you so much for joining us on the Commonwealth Matters. God bless you.